Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
I think, Don, that when we talk about schoolyard playgrounds, this is a common story you don't hear anymore. That is a little boy wrestling with another little boy on the playground. They get pulled apart and the teacher asks, "Why are you fighting?" And the one little boy says, "He says I hit like a girl. So I decked him."
Yeah, you don't hear that story very much, do you? Or if you do, it would be only in the context of those two poor little boys now in jail or in re-education camp for the rest of their lives or something. Oh, man. How many levels of politically incorrect is that little story you
told?
Well,
and take one more step. So then the teacher looks at the kids, finds out why the instigator hit the other kid, and she looks at the kid that got hit and said, "Well, you deserved it." This is something you would not see taking place today. There was an article on the National Review, and Don, this man who grew up in the South in Kentucky, is talking about how it used to be a process. Becoming a man meant gaining toughness, shedding weaknesses, and learning how to take care of yourself and others. And this was fundamental to the development of boys into men. And so and at that time, what would sound offensive, "Hey, you hit like a girl," that's actually a moment of, "Hey, let's settle the score now, because I have, in a sense, the strength to acknowledge we're going to push through this and recognize you can't say I hit like a girl."
Yeah, that's right. Written by David French, who's one of my favorite cultural commentators. And he talks about growing up in an honor culture. That's what he labels it, which is not what we have anymore. And we'll get into that in a minute. But the whole notion of an honor culture is that you as a man would defend your own honor. In fact, that's part of what being a man is that you have the ability or the strength or at least the willingness to go out there. Maybe you're not the strongest guy on the block, but at least you have the willingness to go out there and defend your honor. And it is up to you to defend it, right?
It's up to you, and that's the key point.
That's the key point, is that it's on you to stand up. And so if you're getting bullied or whatever, and this is sort of a classic story that we hear, right, is that the guy who gets the sand kicked in his face and he learns to stand up for himself in the schoolyard, and that used to be a pretty honorable thing to do.
And suddenly that's the kid that is the bully. And in some senses, yes, that kid is maybe the one who goes too far. And just to acknowledge here, he says, you know, looking back on it, I did the wrong thing. I should have, you know, had a little bit tougher of a skin here, and I shouldn't have whacked the kid. It wasn't right that I did, but he's trying to prove a point that today, if I were to turn around and whack a kid for calling me a girl, it would actually create a big problem because I just created a huge offense against the zero tolerance policy. We'd end up going into counseling for making sexist remarks even when we were probably only about 6 years old.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, you don't want to get too caught up in the violence aspect of that either. I think you could still have this honor culture, and that's what he would say, is like, all right, maybe I shouldn't have decked him. But the other alternative would have been to figure it out some other way, where your honor is upheld and you're still resolving the situation, maybe without violence. But the notion is you still stood up and figured it out somehow. That has shifted now in our culture through, well, he goes through a couple of stages. He says we moved it from an honor culture to a dignity culture, where in a dignity culture, you wouldn't go to the violence aspect. You would rely on the courts. And so you wouldn't have a duel. I mean, we've had presidents who've been in duels, you know?
Well, that's one thing that I do like that he mentions, and when he's talking about that, is in the honor culture, there was such a thing as dueling. And in a sense, it was almost, for someone who had a sense of humor, when your honor was offended, you'd make the joke, well, now we have to duel.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because it's this recognition of, well, you actually did something kind of offensive, and I'm going to defend myself. Even if you're joking around saying, hey, we're going to use a set of fake swords here, fencing match.
Or you're going to use the glove, you know, isn't that sort of the classic French way to do it? You'd slap the other guy with the glove, and he'd present his, but you slap him.
I thought you were talking about throwing down the gauntlet there, Don.
Yeah, well.
Is that the French way of resolving conflict?
Perhaps, yes.
See, and I think that this is something that's changed, and I think something that's so fundamental that is discussed here is that it used to be if someone did something offensive, you would have to calculate and look at, well, not only was it done face to face usually, but then my response was then that I had to calculate and weigh the cost. Do I respond? What is an appropriate response? And if I respond, I know that there could be an even bigger punishment, or also the offender to begin with should recognize you can't just do or say something without expecting some sort of consequence.
Yeah, they're going to count the cost too on both sides.
Yes.
You realize that, all right, this person's hopefully probably going to stand up and it's going to cost me something to offend. And both sides are weighing the cost of offending other people's honor. That now has shifted. He calls it now an insidious development. Now we have a victim culture.
And that's the problem. I think that this is so dominant where every single little offense, we don't have a thick skin anymore. If you offend me, if you say something even slightly hurtful, we're immediately appealing to different types of authorities to intervene. We can't even either let it roll off our backs or maybe defend ourselves in some way.
Yeah, you are automatically, when something happens that you're offended by, you are automatically going to some sort of powerful administrative body who they then step in and make you sort of the exalted person. It's almost a benefit now to be a victim.
Yes.
Where in the past, you would count the cost to offend other people. Now, there is no cost to being that offender, if you will, or that offended person. Now, in fact, it's, well, I don't
it's
know.
It gives you a sense of power.
Yeah, that's
what
right. I was
going to
say
about
honor, but power is the right word.
Yes, it gives you power because through that element, again, it's not that personal risk, but being a victim and having this hypersensitivity and fragility actually turns into this almost socially strong element of, well, I was harmed and I can tell my story, or I have power over you to punish you through a different means. And actually, sometimes it creates an even bigger problem because it's not that just that, hey, you said I hit like a girl, I'm going to slug you. It's now that I'm going to make sure you're expelled from school and you have to go through counseling. You can't go to this school anymore.
He points out that this has been terrible for men, this yeah. whole development. He presents the notion that there is zero incentive to mature. And in the past, we would say maturity involves not offending others, for one thing,
right.
but then counting the cost when we do, and we mature and we realize, all right, I'm not going to call other people names, and they're going to count the cost before. Now, it's actually a benefit to be that victim. And because there's zero incentive to mature, and indeed, maturity actually decreases your power. So if you're not a victim, like you said, Timmer, you now have less power in the culture.
If you let things slide, or if you don't deal with them yourselves, you know.
Or if you're just not offended by something, right? Like if you're just walking around like, no, I'm not offended by that. Or even if I am, I'm not going to do anything about it. No, you're not the one now that has the cultural power.
Because people almost continue to do something sometimes when you're not affected by it. It's like, oh, well, I can get away with this without there being any type of punishment. Okay. We keep pushing. We keep tapping.
Yeah. And so now we have a culture. And this is what he tells a little story about moving to the Northeast in the mid-1990s. And he thought at the time that many of the boys there, he called them sort of whiny. Whiny, petulant, hypersensitive.
Sensitive, off-putting.
Incapable of physical self-defense or
confront,
even...
confront the crybabies, man up or shut up, he says.
Now, I admit that coming off of the farm in Canada and getting out into the wider world, I've actually had similar thoughts along the way that the boys that are growing up around me now are not the same that I grew up with. They're a different breed of person. And I don't know if I'd use all those names, you know, whiny, petulant, all that stuff. But there is a sense in which that hypersensitive man, you know, like the term that's been used in the culture is the pajama boy type thing, where you're in the footies and you've got the hot cocoa.
Oh, no, Don, we better stop. We're getting
All right, we'll stop there.
We're getting here.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? There's one moment that really made me pause and actually made me laugh because it is true. And I think that it's both ways for men and women, but especially right now for men. And this is something I hear my boyfriend actually talk about. In the article, what said is appealing for help because feelings were hurt was frankly bizarre to him. Because your feelings were hurt, you were going to appeal for help. So this was just bizarre. And it's funny because my boyfriend said the same thing on a number of occasions, especially when we were in grad school and undergrad. I remember one of the guys would be upset and he would like appeal to the other guy saying, well, yeah, my feelings are really hurt. You know, I'm affected by that. And I remember my boyfriend at one point saying, well, that's just kind of bizarre. In a sense, and not that he was saying, hey, you shouldn't have feelings, but your feelings are hurt. Man up was kind of his attitude. And, you know, some could say, well, wow, that's a really harsh response to have. But at the same time, there was a valid point in that sometimes we're willing to share that something hurt our feelings or offended us when, in a sense, maybe that's just a private thought that really shouldn't be shared.
Yeah, or it's up to you to redress it, right? To figure it out, to deal with it yourself, rather than rely on some sort of other power structure to punish that person who has offended you.
Very, very true. Well, when we come back, we have much to say, including a little bit of news for maybe people who are getting ready to graduate.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Graduation time, Timmery. Do you have any grads in your family this year?
You know, my dad did graduate.
That's right.
Master's program just a few weeks ago, and I have some cousins. And, you know, I also have to say, so many young people that I get to travel across the country speaking to and working with, I love to hear their stories about the universities they're getting ready to go to, maybe the college that they're graduating from and the plans that they have with so many dreams and joys in the future.
It's an exciting time, right?
Yes.
Graduation. It's like, all right, there's the world. I'm going to go conquer it.
Absolutely. And I also see a lot of people who are very nervous. And I think that that's probably more of what I end up talking to a lot of the time when people are reaching out. I'm really nervous. I'm getting ready to graduate, looking to work in these different industries.
Sure. A lot more responsibility about to come on your life. And yeah, it's a big deal. And so you want some good advice, right? When you graduate.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I don't know, those graduation speakers, I've had a mixed bag over my years of attending. You know, it's like sometimes, all right, I'm going to sleep through this one or check my phone. Other times they're pretty good. Mike Rowe had some thoughts for graduates recently. He did a short video at PragerU. If you're not familiar with PragerU, it's quite an interesting website.
It's some of the neatest content that I personally ever find. Very educational on anything from economics, what's going on with ISIS and the different war fronts that we experience, to feminism and understanding. Just very educational, strong educational pieces from very intellectual individuals.
Yeah, if you want to spend 5 to 7 minutes, usually, I think they're all usually about 5 minute video clips, very well done and very educational. Well, Mike Rowe, who is the host of Dirty Jobs, at least that's how he came to fame. He also narrates many of those work shows like Deadliest Catch and those kind of things. Well, Mike Rowe had some advice for graduates. Let's just play a little from the beginning of his talk.
in my opinion, you have all been given some terrible advice. And that advice is this. Follow your passion. Every time I watch the Oscars, I cringe when some famous movie star, trophy in hand, starts to deconstruct the secret of their success. It's always the same thing. Don't let anyone tell you that you don't have what it takes, kid. And the ever popular, never give up on your dreams. Look, I understand the importance of persistence and the value of encouragement, but who tells a stranger to never give up on their dreams without even knowing what it is they're dreaming? I mean, how can Lady Gaga possibly know where your passion will lead you? Have these people never seen American Idol?
All right, we'll pause there. Now, if you have seen American Idol...
That's the best point. It's true. Has anyone actually seen American Idol and the people who audition?
And, of course, the classic thing about American Idol is they didn't... Well, I was going to say they didn't pre-screen. They did pre-screen, but they would push forward a whole bunch of really bad singers to make us all laugh at them and to get yelled at by Simon Cowell. So,
he's not on the show anymore, Don. That was so like 5 years ago, okay?
Simon is actually much calmer now and saying very nice things on that other show.
America's Got Talent.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, at least he was honest, and I think that that's something most people appreciated.
What's striking, and what Mike Rowe goes on to say here, of course, is what we all know. Those people would show up on American Idol, sing terribly, and be absolutely shocked when Simon Cowell would say, "You're not a very good singer."
And then Paula Abdul would be there, pat them on the shoulder, and give them a hug.
Right. But the fact is, they weren't a very good singer. So on what basis are they there thinking that they're a good singer? And this is Mike Rowe's point. Have they been lied to? I guess they've been lied to. Is that what it is? They've just been told to follow their passion.
I'm going to get myself in trouble here because if I say what I really think. So I grew up dancing. I grew up performing classically trained, ballet, jazz, tap. I ended up doing swing later on in my teens because I had a good formation for dancing. And I was introduced to competition dancing in later years when my sister started dancing, my youngest sister. And competition dancing was just something that we didn't do. But it's amazing when you spend hours and days at a competition, there are incredibly talented young men and women who perform. But then there are a lot of these kids that I'm sitting there dying thinking, okay, sometimes you can't tell someone they're really good at something and just leave them to embarrass themselves and just say, hey, follow your passion. Because I'm not kidding. Sometimes it doesn't go over well. And I feel bad when people are laughing, literally.
Yeah. Well, and you follow your passion. Let's just assume they really do love dance. You know, it's not those kids that were forced into it by their parents or whatever.
Yes,
and they actually hate
difference.
It. All right.
Yes.
The ones who actually do love it, they're just not good at it. And I think this is what Mike Rowe is saying. Following your passion, if you don't actually have gifts in that area, is not going to end well. Or following your passion, maybe you are good at something, but has absolutely no ability to support you in your life. Like, you actually cannot make any sort of money at this. Yeah. You can't make a living. It, you know, whatever.
In that case, let your passion be a hobby and
yes,
let it be that.
Exactly. So following your passion because, hey, you can just do and be anything and it's going to be okay. Mike Rowe says that's actually not a very good blueprint for success in life. And this is his message to graduates. But what about all of those people who have been told all of that, hey, follow your passion. And so I've got a passion for, you know, whatever it is, some sort of obscure literature that's never going to... Don't get me wrong, you know, I like obscure literature.
Okay, mister, I have a philosophy and theology
exactly.
type of degrees.
Well, that's exactly right. I am the guy with the philosophy and theology degree. And yeah, you know what? It's not an easy way to make a living.
No, it's not. Well, and I think that he makes a really good point. These are two elements. Just because you're passionate about something doesn't mean you're good at it. Again, that could be a hobby. Also, just because you have a degree in something does not mean you will get a job at it or even mean that you're high enough caliber necessarily to work in that specific area.
Right.
And I know that's hard to think about, but a lot of the time in some of these programs, we are really experiencing a very generic level of education, right, in a certain field, that means that we are qualified to some extent to work within that field, but that doesn't mean that we have the experience and the wider knowledge to then be one of the experts. And I think that that's the problem. People graduate studying whatever it might be and suddenly think that they are going to be the next CEO of a company or the next director of a company that is in charge of that specific topic.
Right. He has some interesting things to say about fields such as welding, plumbing, being a carpenter, an electrician, an HVAC professional. Yeah, the trades. He's very big into the trades. And he tells the story about a septic tank cleaner in this little video, about a person who said, you know what, I just looked around when I was in school and said, where's everybody running? Well, they're going that way. So I went a different way. I went the other way because I assumed there would be more opportunity in that area. And he became a septic tank cleaner. Now, I'm not saying this is for everybody, but what's interesting about it is...
But didn't he end up... What did he go on to do later?
Yeah, what's interesting about it is he actually learned to enjoy and become passionate about doing that work and doing it well.
And I think he ended up making a ton of money.
Oh, yeah. He made a ton of money.
In charge of his own company. Yeah. He's a multimillionaire.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the point Mike Rowe was making there is that sometimes you go and become good at something. Maybe it's not your passion to begin with, but it becomes something you're passionate about later on. And I think one of the things with that is, especially for men like myself, you really need to be doing something that you find meaningful, that is providing for your family, all of those things that go into male psychology that I think is given to us by God, frankly, right? We're made to do that, to do meaningful work that has an impact in the world. That is easier to become passionate about that stuff, right? If you are just doing it for whatever else reason, right? Or you just do something because, well, I thought I liked it in high school. I thought I was passionate about this. And now you can't make a living at it and you're in your basement or whatever, right? And so I think that is an interesting point, that you can become passionate about something later on as you become good at it and it becomes part of your life.
Well, and that's where he says, follow opportunity, not passion, and you'll see that you'll prosper as a result. And he's not saying, you know, just be an opportunist and go where the opportunity is, but truly look at opportunity. We do, you know, I think as Americans, we sometimes miss the idea of the American dream. We do have, it's the land of opportunity, of dreams, but it's how we're going to work at it. Just because we're passionate about something doesn't just mean that our dream is going to become a reality.
Right.
And he even talked about that. He talked about how different people at the Oscars will say, don't let anyone take you down. Don't let anyone say you can't do this. You can do this. Yes, that's true. But do you know what that person's dreams are who you're saying that to? What are their dreams? And are they something that they should be pursuing?
Well, and here's the interesting thing about dreams. Often they are culturally conditioned, right? Mm-hmm. You ask kids today, well, what do you want to be? What's your passion? What do you want to be when you grow up? I mean, the most popular thing today, Timory, YouTube star.
Right.
That's
famous.
That's literally...
Rich and famous.
Yeah, I want to be famous, and they see that the most famous people they're aware of are the YouTube stars.
Yeah.
So that's what kids are passionate about today. The things that people, you know, oh, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to become this. Most of that this is what the culture tells us is acceptable. Like, yeah. Oh, well, you can't do the blue-collar stuff. You have to have a white-collar profession. You have to be a lawyer or whatever else.
And boy, are they surprised, because a lot of tradesmen are making a heck of a lot more than the people who went to university and are struggling with student debt now.
Absolutely.
You know, and I love the story that he tells me about how, you know, he grew up with his grandfather being a tradesman, and he went through shop classes and was working his way to do the same thing his grandfather did. But he didn't really have the skill to do it. And eventually his grandfather, when he came home, said, you can be a tradesman if you get a different kind of toolbox. Recognizing that maybe Micro didn't have the tools to do what he was passionate about. He needed to change his scope and see where the opportunity was for things that he was talented at. And so that's where he then says, staying the course only makes sense if you're headed in a sensible direction.
It's okay to switch courses.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of people feel like when I change the direction I'm working in, that I no longer have meaning. I am a failure. But that's just not true.
Timory and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
The Center for Medical Progress over the last week has released new footage. Now, I have to tell you, Don, about a year and a half ago, David Dalyden, who is the man to a couple years ago now, went undercover and started releasing these videos from having worked with different groups like Stem Express, which go in and buy fetal tissue from abortion clinics. They're purchasing liver, they're purchasing hearts, they're purchasing brain, all these different body parts with great financial value. That being said, I'll never forget last year when David Dalyden, in a meeting with a bunch of attorneys that I was at, said, there's more footage that I have that's being held up in court that I'm not allowed to release yet, but that is far more damning and is a totally different investigation from what we've already seen with Planned Parenthood. And I believe that this is part of it. We just saw a new video that came out from David Dalyden's group, the Center for Medical Progress, about the National Abortion Federation. Now, about 50% of their members are Planned Parenthood employees, often Planned Parenthood managers and abortionists. What we saw taking place in what's commonly known as a secret annual meeting that takes place in the spring, Don, it is absolutely atrocious.
It's beyond words, almost, the evil and the banality of the evil. So the setting is a sort of a trade show.
It's
basically a trade show.
Broken up into group conversations, workshops.
Yeah. So it's insiders in the abortion business all getting together, and they're there with their hidden cameras. And the things that they are saying, even from the table in front of a group of others, I think what you get in the insiders is the straight facts, right? Like, this is not being presented to the world, but this is what we all know is true. And just the violence and the gruesome, talking about the dismembering of the babies and the crushing of the skulls.
They recognize this is a conversation that they have to have behind closed doors to talk about their experiences that essentially other people wouldn't be able to stomach or understand. Things such as when they say that this isn't something that would help in our pro-choice rhetoric. And she goes on to say, and I'm quoting some of these people participating abortionists, here are just a few of the lines. That head that gets stuck that we can't get out. The hemorrhage that we had to manage. She talks about an eyeball just fell into my lap, and that is gross. And they all proceeded to laugh.
Yeah, the laughing was
is
so disturbing in these videos.
It's unbelievable. And this is what's so upsetting yet again, that we would say that women, we have to defend abortion for women to have access to it. When we're talking about the destruction of this unborn child, the ignorance that the abortion clinics, especially Planned Parenthood, try to portray, well, oh, it's not really a baby, it's just fetal tissue. Oh, you're not donating your baby to science. It's just product of conception you're donating to science. That's if they even ask for permission, which in fact, they're not asking for permission most of the time. But this is what's the problem. And then here we are, Don. We have this excellent movie coming out, Wonder Woman, right? And we have different groups coming out saying, well, we want to host women-only screenings of the show, which in and of themselves, that's great. But the Alamo Drafthouse has announced just this past week that they're going to show a screening of Wonder Woman.
Now, hold on, Timory. Are you saying that it's okay to have a women-only screening? You're okay with this?
Like, I
this?
Have no problem with a women-only screening. The problem, I
that
think,
just
lies
sounds
a little
so,
later on.
So sexist. I mean, come on. We live in an era of civil rights, and it is illegal to discriminate based on gender, Timory.
You know, this is one of the things that I think is ridiculous. So people are in uproar saying, how could the Alamo Drafthouse really limit a women-only event? Well, it's ironic because this group is essentially taking all the proceeds and they're donating it to Planned Parenthood. So this is where the first problem lies.
Yeah. So, and I... I've used Alamo Drafthouse. We screen convinced at a few of their places. This is saddening to me. I may not do this in the future because, yeah, they are so politically oriented that they're going to have screenings of Wonder Woman and the proceeds are going to go to Planned Parenthood. All right. I mean, it's up to them. I guess they're a private business. They can do what they want with their money. Fair enough. We don't have to
go and attend their screening.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem, and it's not the problem that they're having a women-only event. The problem is that they're donating to Planned Parenthood. But then they take it a step further. And this is what's ridiculous. Don, they tweet at Planned Parenthood Federation America wants to clarify these Wonder Woman screenings include any of our guests who identify as women as well.
Yeah, well, because they ran into trouble.
Hey, boys, you're welcome.
Nah, but
you don't even have to wear a wig.
But you're not welcome. This shows the silliness and the illogic of this whole thing, right? So I thought, yes, hey, we're pro-woman, like Wonder Woman, great, right? We're going to celebrate women. But in today's day and age, what does that even mean?
But you're not allowed to celebrate women, but you are. So then they say, okay, so women only, or if you identify as woman, and then the theater then goes and clarifies, no guys allowed, and people who identify as women, and we mean it.
So here's what happened. A gentleman bought a ticket, a reporter, I think he's in New York, bought a ticket for a women's only screening of Wonder Woman and said, I'm just going to go. I don't.
He took pictures of his ticket.
I don't identify as a woman. I just, you know, you look at it and on one hand, you could say, well, it's sort of like a Rosa Parks kind of moment. And I don't mean that. Don't take offense at this. Because, of course, we don't think these are equal things at all.
But this is what some people are comparing it to.
Well, because I thought that the whole gender thing, I thought this was the new civil rights movement, right? The whole pro-gay marriage, all of this stuff. Originally, they tried to tap onto the rhetoric of the civil rights movement.
Yes.
So that you were born this way, right? Like if I'm gay or whatever, if I'm transgender, it's because I was born that way. And to treat me in any sort of way is the same as treating a person who is a different color than you in that way. That was the original rhetoric.
And just to be clear, you're not born that way. The only thing that might happen, which is extremely rare, is that you're born with ambiguous genitalia. And in that case, you can appeal to the chromosomal knowledge of that person, do tests. That being said, you're born either with male anatomy or female. Your biochemical makeup is either male or it's female. There's no other way about it. I'm sorry.
So this is, of course, so obvious that they've gone away from that whole born this way thing, right?
Oh, they have. They don't make it very often.
No. We don't say that anymore. Now, we've talked about this, I think, last week, Timory. Now, if you are places like Harvard, your gender can change from day to day, hour to hour. It's up to you. It's just your mindset. And so you could show up at Alamo Drafthouse and, I suppose, identify as a woman for the 2 hours of the movie or whatever and be fine. But that just shows the silliness of the whole thing, right? If that's what it means to be a woman, if we are, quote, celebrating woman now with this pro-woman movie that's coming out, and it actually looks, I don't know,
I'm
the trailer
really
looks pretty good. Yeah,
I'm very excited. And that's what's so irritating. But here's the funny thing, is that even as they've gotten a ton of backlash, people saying, hey, you can't discriminate. So it's funny because their own logic, this group that's very pro-abortion, donating to Planned Parenthood for the screening, is all inclusion, all about equality. And their version of equality is that people are the same in a sense, but at the same time, they're not. Here, they then stand by their plan after getting a ton of backlash. They say that they're trying to provide an experience where women truly reign supreme.
Yeah, I saw that language. What?
How about we have a Father's Day event where men are the kings of their house? Oh my gosh. Where the men are the reigning power. Oh my gosh. People would be so upset.
Yeah, reign supreme. I mean, wow, that's very sexist language, isn't it? I mean, I thought we were all supposed to be equal and accepting of others. We can't have one gender reigning supreme over others.
Don, are you feeling a little triggered by this?
Yes.
Are you feeling triggered? Do I need to put you in the other room and safe space? Are your feelings hurt?
Well, I'm going to call the authorities, some sort of authorities here. Take care of this for me. I do like this story because it shows so many of the silly aspects of it, right? Like,
right.
Well, we're trying to be pro-woman. Oh, wait, but that doesn't really work, does it, within our framework? So we're going to jump over here and say everyone's welcome. And then we get this reporter. Well, no, not everyone's welcome because, and you can just see them sort of like their head is spinning and about to explode. Like, we're just trying to do the right thing. But what is the right thing? Because it's so nonsensical.
Well, and this is the other part that really got me. So here, this journalist, Stephen Miller, very cheeky young man, by the way, he has decided to get this ticket. He's going, people are in uproar that he is going to this women-only screen saying, well, why can't you just let women have this one thing, this one thing, their Wonder Woman screening? But what he's coming back and really showing that's clear is, I am perfectly within my legal rights to buy a ticket to anything I would like to. And not only that, I can buy a ticket, but not only that, they can't kick me out. Have you ever heard maybe of the fact that the civil rights back in 1964, you can't get kicked out of something based on your sex, race, color, religion, national origin? That's a civil right. And so this same type of group that says that women are not equal, that individuals with experiencing same-sex attraction or who have gender dysphoria, that they're being discriminated against, I think you need to have a wake-up call and recognize that you have basic civil rights that have been fought for.
Well, and you have taken that proper civil rights notion and applied it to categories that now make the civil rights movement not what it was, right? So when you apply that civil rights language to things like beliefs and ideas about gender, you end up with a nonsensical, unworkable system that comes back to bite you when you try to do something that you want, right? You've got your own rules used against you. And I don't, there's a little bit of poetic justice.
Well,
to
let's
that,
go maybe. See Wonder Woman and enjoy the movie, but please don't go fundraising for Planned Parenthood.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Ben and Jerry's in the news yet again. That famous ice cream, if you grew up, maybe a millennial, saw the 2006 movie Aquamarine, that classic line for anyone who's ever been through a breakup, where the girl, the main character, Aquamarine, says, "Who needs Raymond? I found two new men to love. Their names are Ben and Jerry." As she's sitting there, I think she's sitting in the bathtub, Dawn, eating her ice cream, brokenhearted after this devastating breakup. It's commonly known as a breakup ice cream, but this time it is known as a little something different.
Yeah, hopefully the next breakup you have, you don't want two scoops of the same type of ice cream, especially if you live in Australia, because you can't get it right now at Ben and Jerry's. They're not allowing you to order two scoops of the same ice cream until Australia legalizes gay marriage.
They're standing in solidarity. They say that we believe love comes in all flavors.
Michael Brown, he had an interesting article at stream.org. How does two scoops of ice cream relate to same-sex marriage? And he suggests that maybe they're actually showing that same-sex marriage is not the same as marriage.
They're actually making a great point. So
yeah.
You can't have your two scoops of vanilla ice cream, because how would you feel if not only can you not have your two scoops of vanilla ice cream, you'd be furious. But if you were also told you're not allowed to marry the person you love, well, they're comparing it. But at the same time, when you can't have your two scoops, you have to have different types of ice cream. They're showing exactly the counter argument in the sense that you can't have two of the same thing to make marriage.
Yeah, two vanillas is just two vanillas. You want chocolate and vanilla. You have a different unity. You have something new that's created. And so I don't know that I'd take it too far with the whole, does this really prove that same-sex marriage is not really marriage? But the whole notion that we can represent gay marriage by two of the same ice cream, I think shows how little they truly understand marriage.
Well, they misunderstand the conjugal element of marriage. We're not talking about the today we have these redefinition type of mindsets of everything anymore. It's what I make it or what needs to be absolutely equal. But with marriage, there is such a thing as the conjugal union, the conjugal view of marriage. And two people who, yes, are equal in dignity, but they're not the same. They're male and female. And only through those two individuals can the conjugal union, the completed sexual act, take place and the creation of new life. This is what marriage is, for the good of the spouses and the procreation, education of children. And that's something that's not possible when you have two of the same flavor ice cream scoops.
It just doesn't work that way. Hey, we talked about graduation a little bit earlier in the show, and here's an interesting story about a girl who is not going to be allowed to walk at her Maryland Christian High School because she is pregnant. And here's the backstory with this. I can actually resonate with this because I went to high school for my senior year at a very strict conservative high school.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you're pregnant.
I was not pregnant.
I was going to say, I know people are trying to say that guys can be pregnant, but I mean, I was fully, I mean, it would not shock me, Don, if you said you were.
We were not that progressive back then. We had not reached the enlightened status that we have today. But we did have very strict rules about what you could or could not do at this school. And if you broke them, there was consequences. And you signed a little contract before you went there. This sort of deal happened at this Maryland high school where you have a morals clause. And if you break any of these, there's certain rules. You can't, I guess, do drugs and different things.
Well, no premarital sex, no drugs, drinking before the age of 21. Just a basic element of rules of conduct, again, that they signed for this Heritage Academy in Hagerstown.
Well, Maddie Runkles did that and then turned up pregnant and faced some consequences. In fact, she faced several consequences early on this year. So she was, this is a 4.0 student, president
leader
of many things. Yeah, huge leader. So she got all of that leadership taken away from her. She was suspended for a couple of days.
They actually said that she had to finish the year homeschooling, but the parents pushed back. She was allowed to then go ahead and finish the school year out, but she wasn't allowed to walk in the ceremony.
Yeah, so this has raised some issues that has she been punished too much by not being allowed to walk? And in fact, is what is happening now. So we have this pregnant teenager. She could have had an abortion and no one would have really known about it. She did not. She kept the baby. She's going to have the baby. And now she can't walk. The question has arisen, is she being overly punished to the point now where it looks like the pregnancy itself, the baby itself, is something to be punished for, not the premarital sex, right? And so they're distinguishing between, all right, we had this immoral act. Yes, that happened, no doubt. She's been punished enough, at least her supporters say, for that. To take it this far where she doesn't get to walk is presenting a picture to the culture that says we don't actually value the baby. We don't value the pregnancy. And I think that's a legitimate concern here.
I definitely think it's a legitimate concern. I will, just to give them credit in a sense, Heritage Academy has come out saying that they are glad that she has chosen not to choose an abortion, that they are pro-life. Another element to it, you know, the father is actually high up on part of the school board to some extent. And he ended up finally stepping down just out of the sheer, I think, frustration that was taking place for him, because he said, you know, we've had a number of disciplinary issues and they were not handled in this way. And so a lot of people are saying that it's unfortunate that a young woman who is pregnant is being made an example of in a culture that really needs to stand for pro-life principles, especially Christian school.
Yeah, it is the, how do we stand for pro-life?
Yes.
For the baby and support the life of the mother, right? Mm-hmm. So being pro-life is being pro-mother, pro-baby, pro-life in all of its forms. How do we do that while still having rules that say, no, you should not engage in the act that brings about the baby before you're married?
Well, and I think that I understand in a sense, I think, where this Christian school is going, and that so often being a teen mom is celebrated. It's glamorized, not just on television, but even a young young women. And not that all women are saying, oh, it's great to get pregnant, but that a lot of attention is given to that young woman. Working in the crisis pregnancy centers, I see the reality that these young women who get pregnant in high school truly have a great burden. And the choice to keep their baby, not to have an abortion, is a challenging decision. And God willing, there are people there supporting this young woman, including crisis pregnancy centers, which you can, if you know someone who is, you can look up a crisis pregnancy center option line, and there are people who will help you. But the issue is when we're missing the fact that this girl is already going to be punished in a sense. She's already going to struggle. I don't think it's appropriate for Heritage Academy to say, you can't graduate. It would be one thing to say, hey, you can't graduate and have your little kid in a cap and gown next to you, which I don't really agree with.
Right.
And I mean, that's just my opinion there. I think that it's celebrating teen pregnancy. But to allow her, based on her academic merit, to graduate, that should be allowed.
Yeah, I think you look at this case individually. I mean, you should look at each case individually, right? You don't want to paint too broad a stroke. I like your point about not celebrating teen pregnancy. It seems like in this case, they haven't done that. That's not going to be the danger.
Exactly.
It's not like you have a bunch of girls who are looking for government money based on how many kids they have.
Yes.
Which is an issue in the culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that happens. That's not happening in this case. That's not this situation. And so in this situation, maybe you do take a more positive approach, say, yes, we've punished you enough, especially now that it's got the national coverage that it has. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be very careful about being pro-woman along with being pro-baby. I mean, that's sometimes so clearly the issue here, that the pro-choice side does not look at the baby at all. They simply look at the woman. Like, that's their focus. We're not going to look away from the woman. The pro-life side says, we're not looking away from that baby. That baby is the issue. At some level, we need to look at both lives, right? Like,
and that's
to be
the issue.
Pro-life is to look at both lives.
Well, and I think that that's why a lot of people get frustrated with the pro-life movement, is that they think that there's this just twisted obsession with the baby. But if most pro-lifers, and if they don't, they should develop this understanding that we are pro-woman and pro-child. We are pro-people, bottom line. We can't really, I think, separate out to such an extent. And this is an example where we're not being pro-woman, and we're suddenly rejecting her basic ability to walk in a graduation ceremony. She was suspended. She has seen consequences, even just the shame that she experiences and having to walk around a high school being one of the only pregnant girls, if not the only pregnant girl. People know. And they're going to learn from her example as well that it's not easy to be a teen mom.
No, that is exactly right. So, on one hand, we don't want to go back to the days where we whisked women away and had them have their babies.
Hidden in the convent.
Yeah, right. Hidden somewhere. And on the other side, we're not celebrating teenage motherhood. We don't want to lift it up as some sort of elevated status. There should be a middle ground there.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they could have tried a little bit harder. I don't know. It's always tough to put yourself in a particular situation when you don't know all the facts and you're trying to do what's best for the school. I sort of see both sides of this issue, and you want to be pro person all the way around on
Absolutely.
This one.
Absolutely. Well, before we close real quick, I just want to really a prayer for the people in the Philippines. I do not think, Don, this is being covered enough. In the Philippines, there's a major attack by ISIS allies that took a Catholic church, attacking a Catholic church, taking hostage Catholic priests and a group of churchgoers, and threatening to kill many, many people. There were some deaths. And between Manchester, we saw a recent attack in Cairo, taking 28 lives. We need to be in prayer and aware of these attacks that are taking place across the world.
Let's keep praying, and we'll see you next time.
This has been Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.